And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death.
Oh. And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the house of pain. Back to the house of pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from classic cults and all the cheese in between. The movies are B, but the entertainment is great, A. And I'm your host, Mr. Jason Giaconetti, and I'm joined once again by my dad, Mr. Al Giaconetti.
Good morning, Jay. Today we've got the fourth installment on the
Mummy sequels.
Mummy sequels,
yeah.
Called The Mummy's Curse from 1944. My opinion, it was one of the better, it was a pretty good sequel. As sequels go, considering that this movie actually went into production 21 days after the Mummy's Ghost was released.
Yeah, and we'll get to it right after this.
To explain, sometimes it seems as if I belong to a different world.
Hey, looks like the imprint of a man's body. A big man, too.
Unless I'm mistaken, a mummy was buried here.
In a room beneath the chapel, I found the bodies of freshly murdered men.
Betty, what happened?
He brought me here. I was looking for
you. Master, I meant no harm.
The Mummy's Curse was released December 22nd, 1944, with a 62-minute running time. Actually, it's like 61 minutes, 60 yeah. minutes. Depends on how long you watch the credits for. And again, these Universal Studios. Your director here was Leslie Goodwin's producer, Oliver Drake. And your screenplay was by Bernard Shepard, or Schubert, excuse me. Story by Leon Abrams and Dwight V. Babcock. And again, your main star here is Lon Chaney Jr. as Kaharis the Mummy. So one of the things when you talk about this movie is that, again, it is the fourth sequel to The Mummy. The Mummy, which really could be called The Egyptian, because it's basically just Dracula told instead of Dracula. It's, with the mummy kind of thing, right? An Egyptian. But these are the four movies that when people say a mummy, they think of mummies. When you think about Boris Karloff as the mummy, he's the mummy for all of one scene, really. It's very famous. He comes to life, but you don't see anything. And then he is then Imhotep, the old man, the whole rest of the time. But when you say a mummy, they don't think of Imhotep like the man. They think of like Kaharis or Imhotep as in his mummy form. And this is where Lon Chaney got to play the mummy again for the third time. Because remember, Tom Tyler played him, obviously, in the first one, in The Mummy's Hand.
Yeah. Right.
So, which, again, folks, for those of you who want to go back, Derek Cook and I covered that way back for Mother's Day a couple years ago. We covered The Mummy's Hand and talked all about that. So, your story begins, shockingly,
with the song.
Yes. singing and dancing. They, I forgot that it opens, the movie opens with them singing, like they're in the bar, like the woman singing in the bar, and I'm like, what is going on here?
And it's,
like,
and it's not just a snippet, it's a good, it's a
full, it's the full, song. She belts that out. And you'll be surprised to find, because at the end of Mummy's Ghost, we left off, we're in New England, and now we're in Louisiana.
Yeah, it's 25 years later. But
every movie takes place 25 years later. So this movie literally takes place now.
Right. But they, really don't explain, again,
not 1944 current day, like 2000s. Luke measured it out. He goes, this movie literally takes place now. And he's like, do you think, I'm like, and it's not like they change it. See, you can say, oh, this 25 years later, and like, there's like space car, like, but there's everyone still looks exactly like it's 1944.
Right.
So,
anyway. And the one thing they don't reference how they went from the New England setting in the previous movie to this, because they're the two characters, the Ananka and the Mummy, are supposed to be the same. So it's not two new people.
Yeah. Well, they go down in the bog in New England and magically reappear in a swamp in Louisiana.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this movie has time travel, or it is time travel and space, you know, differential, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, so the Southern Engineering Company is trying to drain the local swamp for the public good. That's what they can tell them, at least. However, the efforts are being hampered by superstitions of the workers, who believe the area is haunted by the mummy and his bride.
Right. Now, when you look at that, now this is, everybody's in, it looks like they're this is the only job they have. Now, the workers are not too happy about working in the swamp, right? But it's a steady job with pay. What else would they be doing? You know what I mean? That's what I was looking for.
Yeah. So the two representatives from the Scripps Museum are Dr. James Halsey and Dr. Izor Zahab.
Zahab, right.
Zahab, yeah. Arrive on the scene and present their credentials to the head of the project, Pat Walsh, and they have come to search for the missing mummies buried in the swamp years earlier, which, of course, we know is not true, because those mummies were lost in the swamp in New England, and now, again, I don't understand why they called it. I get it, like, they wanted to switch it up, but, like,
I mean, just
why?
I mean, just put something in, even if it's just a 30-second throwaway, on how they got from one to the other. But they wouldn't have come. Let's say the bog made them float to the top. They wouldn't have put them in two body bags and shipped them down to Louisiana
and then put them in a swamp.
Put them in a swamp.
Well, that doesn't make sense. So anyway, continuity. Where are we here? Evidence. Conversation is interrupted by the news of a workman being murdered in the swamps. Evidence at the scene convinces Halsey that the murderer has found the mummy of Caharis.
Right now, I don't know if it's a classic line, but it's done in very dramatic fashion. One of the workers comes in, and after they find the body in the swamp, and he says, "Find a lizard on the grave. Take no shame, your life would save."
Yeah, I've never heard it before.
Yeah, so. I mean, anyway, but they stop the movie, and it's a very dramatic line, because it's on his face, and he's talking about
it. They were trying to go for a catchphrase, it didn't work. So one of them, they definitely say etouffee. For those Kolchak fans out there, you remember your etouffee from your learning about your demons, not demons, but your... What grows from the moss, and it like winds up killing the guy who's in his sleep and stuff like that. It's very, that's what I'm calling it. Anyway, so a little bit of eating. Zainab sneaks into the swamp and meets Raghab. Raghab is a disciple of the Arkham sect, and Zainab is secretly a high priest. The follower killed the worker that unearthed Caharis and has taken the immobile monster to the deserted monastery. Zainab explains the legend of Caharis and Ananka to Raghab as he brews the Tana leaves, giving instructions on the use. The old sanctuary of the monastery intrudes on the ritual and is promptly executed by the rising Caharis. Now, we're back to the Tana leaves again here.
Yeah, it's three leaves to keep his heart beating.
Nine give motion.
Keep him motion.
Now, in the mummy's hand, they tell us that if he ever was to get his hands on all the Tana leaves, he'd become a monster that the world has never seen before, which would be really funny, because if Gort showed up, he's a monster the world had never seen before. And what would they have done if they had tag teamed up? It's like you know, Kane and the Big Show getting together there kind of thing.
And but, this is where the first of the the main flashback is. They go back and they show that Karras's crime.
Which is funny.
I think it's very effective because
they flash back to the mummy's hand.
Right.
So now it's Tom Tyler.
Yeah.
Getting mummified.
Mummified.
Not Lon Chaney Jr. because he wouldn't look the part.
Right.
Funny because originally in the mummy's hand, when they flash back to Boris Karloff.
Right.
So this is the flashback. So in the original mummy's hand, they flash back to that, which then tells him the story. But then he winds up, like they don't use that. They use the other parts they filmed around it.
Right.
At least they didn't flash back to Karloff as part of a flashback when they were doing a flashback.
Right. And then this is similar depiction in Hammer's 59 remake, you know, with Cushing and Lee. They actually have that, which again, it's a very effective scene in the movie.
So, Zanab explains the legend of, okay, he did that. Meanwhile, the mummy of Ananka rises from the swamp after being partially uncovered by a bulldozer. That's a great scene because the bulldozer goes through. You're like, all right, what are we watching for? And all of a sudden you see the ground breaking away and she gets up.
And it
works really well, but you're like, you know full well there's no way that poor lady was laying underneath there and the bulldozer went over top of her because there's a cut.
Well, no, but it says on the DVD, no, the...
Yeah, the DVD. DVD, I have the blur, yeah.
It says that she was under there for a good 2 or 3 minutes before they pulled it up, and it was clay and it was little pebbles and stuff like that. But it is a great scene. But
you can see where the thing goes and then he goes back. There's not like she's raising up and it's right there.
He would have crushed her.
He would have killed her. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm not saying she wasn't under the ground. I'm just saying she wasn't under the bulldozer. So where are we here? She emerges. Immerse herself in a pond, and the mud is washed away, revealing an attractive young woman. Cajun Joe, and that's the very famous Dice Man bust that I did many, many years ago of him getting choked out by the mummy. That's Cajun Joe right there. Finds the girl wandering listlessly in the swamp, calling out the name Kaharis.
Wow. Okay. Let's go back a little bit here with her coming out.
That's what happens.
By the way, in the credits, I just want to mention this. In the credits, the only relationship to special effects was a guy by the name of John Fulton, who did special effects in a lot of movies, but nothing that had to do with makeup. Jack Pierce, who was the quintessential makeup artist for Universal, is the one who did the makeup for Ananka and for Lon Chaney.
Yeah.
And the makeup that she has on when she gets out of there is just striking. It is, and it's not a quick cut either. It's a long thing. But what was amazing out of this is she gets up and she starts to stumble through and she walks into a stream and she actually stumbles all the way through. And when she comes up out of the stream, her hair is done.
Yeah.
She's got,
she's dry. Yeah.
She's
everything.
Dry and everything else. And she's gorgeous. And she has, but the thing that really gets you is that later on, she can actually talk English. She actually has a vocabulary.
Yeah.
Well, and she's a scientist.
Yeah. Well, she's not a scientist, but she just knows stuff.
She knows a lot more.
Because she was there. So where are we? The owner. Okay, so he takes her to down to the local pub where the owner, the lady who was belting out the tune earlier, she goes to help the girl. Later, Karras finds her and murders murders her as Ananka flees. So, it's kind of funny. I mean, literally, this entire movie is, I wish I was joking, Kaharis walking around looking for this woman, everyone getting in his way and getting choked.
Right.
He just chokes everybody.
And he's slower than a snail.
Yeah, he's dragging the leg. So Ananka is soon found lying unconscious beside the side of the road by Halsey and Betty Walsh, who's obviously the niece of Pat Walsh. While in their kit. So they find her, right? So Kaharis is walking toward her. Let's help her up. They literally turn. It's like an Abbott Costello routine. Right. They turn their back. And he's like, just misses and just misses. And everything is just missing. And I'm like, I think Abbott Costello ripped this off later on for Abbott Costello Meet the Mummy.
I mean, but you can't. That's what I wrote down was that can't hear him, can't see him.
Yeah. Right. He's lumbering through everything. He's not graceful.
And he's coming.
He's got a smell horrible too.
Right, but he's coming through from. He's not walking on
pavement. He's walking through the forest.
So yeah, you think the leaves would rustle?
Yeah. Anyway, so where are we? Her stay at Halsey's camp is again okay. While under care and although suffering from apparent amnesia, the girl displays an incredible knowledge of ancient Egypt. Her stay at the Halsey camp is interrupted by the appearance of Kaharis. And where the kind physician, Dr. Cooper, is killed. She again takes flight, and Halsey and the others go in search for her. And this is what you're talking about. She knows all about Egypt and stuff because, hey, I was there.
I mean, she can type. She can write.
Yeah.
She can speak.
Give her a job to keep her busy. I got a job for her, and I'm like...
She's going to take his job.
Yeah, right. So I got a job.
He doesn't want either. I mean, we talk about a leap of faith plot. I mean, that's where the movie goes down.
Okay, we're on the fourth sequel.
No, in
a series that has used flashbacks of previous movies with different actors in it to portray the same actor. The leap of faith here, Dad, is literally because they're like, they have to have a reason for her to know, like she has to be able to speak to them. If she's speaking Egyptian, they won't understand her. Like, okay, so this isn't the Mummy, the remakes of the Mummy. I don't mean the Tom Cruise one. This isn't like the Summers remakes and stuff like that, where they speak in Egyptian, like they're speaking in whatever. Like, that's a different story. Then you have subtitles. Do you know what subtitles cost? Like, this is a movie got to keep the cost down. So,
but again, this is a Universal movie, so I think it's a heck of a lot more money than some of the movies we've reviewed. I mean, it was probably up around maybe $150,000-$200,000.
I'm just saying, this is a movie that
they actually have to pay people.
Yeah, I can't imagine though that they were going to take the time to have her speak Egyptian and then have someone speak back to her or translate or whatever. Like,
she should not be able to talk at all.
I agree with that. I could see, but I'm saying I think that she's speaking English compared to speaking Egyptian, you know, kind of thing.
But
whatever.
I mean, but again, to have her be able to type.
Yeah. Hey,
and write. I mean, as I'm saying, as I'm watching this thing, I'm really into this movie, and
it's a good movie.
It's only 60 minutes long, so it's probably about 45 minutes in, and I'm saying, this isn't that bad. Then all of a sudden, not only can she speak, that they get it to be clean, and she's got her makeup on and all that stuff. I said that's fine, but now she's. I mean, let's go. Let's keep going.
So fleeing the monster after he attacks and kills Cajun Joe, which is the choke scene I was talking about. She comes to Betty's tent seeking refuge. However, Kaharis is not far behind. He enters the tent and whisks away the princess, leaving a horrified Betty unhurt. Even though he knocked down the tent by knocking the pole down the middle.
Right. And I think that was unintentional. It was probably unintentional, and then when he did it, let's leave it in.
Well, it leads to probably the most famous scene from this movie. Besides, choking Cajun Joe is one.
Right.
The other one's when he comes out with her, he walks through out of the tent and he's carrying her.
Yeah.
That is used. What's a monk? It's a very famous, that's still of him holding her in his arms and she's laying there, hair down. There aren't many mummies scenes where he's carrying. See, Tom Tyler was not a big individual, so he's not. Him carrying her was difficult. Lon Chaney was a big dude,
guy,
and he's carrying her. It looks very much like a Frankenstein monster kind of scene.
Yeah.
And that scene when he walks out and it like reveals him, it's so effective and it's shot well. That scene is often used when people say, "Oh, a mummy," and they show that. That's what they show. It's very famous. So it looked good. I mean, again, I don't know how it was unintentional, but they definitely played it up. They didn't have the tent stay up. It fell down. It came crashing down, you know, kind of thing. So Betty asks Rahab for his help and find Dr. Halsey. The treacherous disciple has other ideas and takes her to the monastery instead. Zainab, having already administered the Tana fluid to the young Ananka, is angered to find Rahab making advances on Betty. He orders her death, but Rahab kills him instead. Halsey arrives, tracks them down from the camp after finding Betty's tent destroyed. The struggle ensues between Rahab and Halsey until Kaharis intervenes. The creature, sensing Rahab's betrayal, advances on his former ally. Locking himself in a cell-like room, Rahab is powerless to do anything but watch as Kaharis literally brings down the walls on them. Halsey, Betty, and the rest find the mummified remains of Ananka in an adjoining room. And literally... the movie ends.
It ends
with the uncle saying, "Take her. She's a useless secretary." He's like, "Great," and I'm like, "What?" Like this took a very weird turn at the end, you know? Can he just giving away his niece who has not, you know, guessed to whatever? But it's the end of the movie when he tears through he knocks down the walls. He's pushing it in. It's very like Curse of the Werewolf. Like, I know Curse of the Werewolf was later. When he rips the bars off, but he's knocking in the walls and literally he's like, "All right." The mummy in this thing is very much like a Frankenstein's monster. Again, when Lon Chaney played the Frankenstein monster, very the same way, lumbering, powerful, destroying everything in his path. This mummy isn't played for, you know, like being crafty at all. It literally is, you know, bulldozer. He's going through things. So, but yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is that with the end of the movie, I mean, the mummy has died many different ways, but being buried in a bog or being buried in a swamp, it would probably, to have him just be killed by having bricks fall on him didn't make any sense.
Well, I don't think it's he's
almost
killed.
Like, it's almost like when Frankenstein, in The Ghost of Frankenstein, where he supposedly dies in the fire, and then he's frozen. Well, again, well, the frozen one with the Frankenstein.
He's not dead. He's just frozen.
Yeah. But again, dying in the fire, and then he makes a comeback, and then and I believe it's the House of Frankenstein.
Right.
Where he doesn't even have any burn marks on him. You know, they take it's a liberal interpretation of this is how he dies. Everybody's safe. Let's all go home happy.
Yeah, I don't know if he's dead. It's just, you know, now he's crushed under there. And let's be honest, once the tantalus wear off, he can't move anyway.
Right.
So, but then Ananka, like, she rots. Like, she's there and she starts rotting
because
they haven't done it right. I don't know. Like, the end of the movie doesn't have a whole lot of explanation, but again, it's a lot of just kind of wrapping this up. And I don't know if they even thought they were making another one 25 years more in the future, which would actually be further in the future than we are currently right now watching this thing years later.
Weren't they going to include the mummy in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, and then they decided not to?
Yeah, well, the talk was he was supposed to be in there, but they didn't know how they were going to do that.
Right.
Because one, Lon Chaney was at this point already playing like the Wolfman, and they originally had thought Lon Chaney needed to play Frankenstein, but they knew that wasn't going to work because that's what happened when Frankenstein meets the Wolfman.
Yeah.
And so they said, okay, we got to get Glenn Strange. Who's going to play the mummy? And literally, it would have to have been Lon Chaney, and they're like, that's not going to work.
Right, and especially at that point, he wasn't exactly sober all the time.
Well, but the makeup alone, this should take hours. I mean, even though this is a mask he's putting on, he has a mask on here.
Yeah.
It's not like the back in the day with the cotton, the collodion, and whatever kind of thing, but there's no way in the world they were going to be able to do this. So, this movie has its part. I mean, to me, the sticking point of all the... I love all the Mummy sequels. I mean, to me, they're great. You can actually watch all of them in an afternoon because the longest one, I think, runs 68 minutes. And this one runs... It says 62. I think it's 60. Like, the Blu-ray ran 60 today. 61 at most on the outside. So maybe with the Universal bumper, you know, at the back end, maybe it gets up to 62 minutes. So you could watch. We actually watched them all when we were younger, right, back to back to back when they all came out on VHS.
You know, the one thing about this movie that differs from the others is that the other movies had John Carradine and George Zucco as the and so they added a lot of great character acting to these things. This movie here, other than Peter Coe, who is
there's not many. Yeah.
There's nobody in here that you would even recognize. And so it showed that, well, the thing with George Zucco is that George Zucco actually, even though they dropped him, he died very shortly after this movie came out.
Right. So originally this movie was called The Mummy Returns. We know, obviously, the Mummy's Curse. And then The Mummy Returns was later used as a sequel to The Mummy when they redid The Mummies in the 90s.
Right.
You know, so which is just makes sense. Because, you know, people think, well, how come they ever made a movie called The Mummy Returns? They were going to. So you would think The Mummy Returns might have been the first sequel, but it's not because it's not the same mummy, so it couldn't be The Mummy Returns.
Right.
Now this is where Kahara's comes from. And to be honest, I've said this all the time. When people say Frankenstein monster, and you say describe the Frankenstein's monster, everyone's like, oh, I'm just, and you think, well, they're going to be describing Boris Karloff. They're not. They're describing the Don Post mask, which is, of course,
Jack Pierce's.
The makeup from Evan Costello Mummy Frankenstein. Oh. It's Glenn Strange.
Glenn Strange.
Right? Glenn Strange is Frankenstein, is what people describe Frankenstein as most of the time. The idea of the green skin, the bigger head, like that, right? When you say to someone, describe a mummy, oh, they're going to describe Boris Karloff. No, they're not. They're going to describe Kaharis, which is probably Lon Chaney's interpretation, because that's the most famous one. The hand bandaged to the, you know,
right.
The hand is bandaged to him, the dragging the foot. You are describing. He's a big dude, like a lumbering guy. You're describing Kaharis. Kaharis is a very important character here. And again, I know some people are like, oh, well, Imhotep and Kaharis are different characters. They have always been different characters. And that's why when they did the Mummy remakes with Peter Vozlo playing Imhotep, he's the high priest, right? They never made the Kaharis story.
Right.
Which, again, who knew The Rock was going to become The Rock and then the Scorpion King was going to become bigger than the whole rest of everything, right? But if you could have told that story where instead of it being Imhotep, like, oh, no, not this guy again. Wait, who's this guy? Because Imhotep is the priest and he controls all stuff. Gaharis is the killing machine. He's the one who kills everybody. So that would have made, to me, I think, where in those sequels, the one where they go to like China or Japan and whatever, and they have like the Emperor's Army, whatever, that misstep that wasn't a great film, that would have been the one where you would have made the Gaharis story where he's the killing machine, and all of a sudden Brandon Fraser's like, this is not the same guy. This is not the same thing. That could have been where they could have fixed that. That's where Universal, these four movies set the standard for why The Mummy, which the Hammer's Mummy, 1959, is my favorite mummy movie of all time. Right. And it's outstanding. That's why that movie's like that. And he's Gaharis. This is exactly why. The Hand, the Curse, the Ghost, and Tomb, those four created this thing. And that's what mummies look like to do today. Yeah. They're very influential.
You know, the remake in 1999, I guess it was. That was a really good movie.
Oh, yes, but a very different
movie. Different movie, but it was very good because it was a really good take on it.
Yeah.
What
I'm saying is that's Imhotep. He's a
the
priest.
One, I guess the one last year, the one that Tom Cruise did.
A couple years ago, yeah. I mean, okay, but again, they tried something different and they didn't wasn't successful. But what I'm saying is instead of when you tell the Imhotep story, it can't be this story.
Right.
The Imhotep story is he's the high priest. He's the head of everything. Gaharis, and not so much. You know, kind of thing. Yeah. So you know,
I wanted to bring this out only because I just didn't understand it. Gaharis was originally buried, according to the thing, in an accursed burial plot.
Yes.
And then the priests of Arkham removed him to a cave because Amun-Ra decreed he keep guard over Princess Anaka's tomb.
Yes, but he was
mummified because he desecrated Anaka's
tomb.
But now he's the guard. I mean, why was there a change of heart?
Yeah. Okay. Again, Dad, it's religion, so they kind of they gotta fit there. So, but I'm saying is the whole point is that's where Mummy's hand. That's why he's there. And they find the tomb. They go, this is Anaka's tomb. This is Anaka's tomb. This is Gaharis. So they're reading the thing, and that's when Gaharis comes and starts killing all them. Yeah. Right. Anaka also is the same that Imhotep wants to get. And like, the stories kind of cross over kind of what's there. And that's why it's important that this is a different story. I think what they're saying is that Imhotep isn't he's the priest who's high up. And this guy is just, he's like the bodyguard and that's his job. So again, however they want to slice it, you know, Anubis says he must be here, whatever. They had to have a reason for him to be there because he can't be buried across Egypt. Because it's bad enough when they go to the Hill of the Seven Jackals,
right?
That they got to find this thing. And the worst part is they go to the Hill of the Seven. Where is this thing? Literally, the other side of the hill is how do you not see the giant thing? They're standing there going, I can't see anything. And they go to the other side, and it's not like it's in the sand. It's not like Aladdin, where Jafar makes the thing, where he's looking for to find the lamp and stuff like that, where it comes out of the ground and comes back down. It's literally there, and they just aren't looking behind them. So, like we said, folks, this is a great movie. Obviously, The Mummy's 1932 is very little or nothing to do with The Mummy's Hand, Ghost, and Tomb and Curse, obviously. And those movies were made back to back. 42, 43, 44, 44 kind of thing, or maybe 43, 43. But it was like literally one after the other after the other. And in fact, this one debuted in December, and then it was wide released actually in February. So it did its debut, then it was wide released in February. And I guarantee you this played on some of those, you know, when you go down and you have your quarter and you go and see all those movies and all those cartoons and get whatever. Because this is a perfect kind of, it's 60 minutes. It fits a nice little slot, gets you a movie kind of thing. Two of these back to back, only 2 hours.
Yeah, right.
You know, so
yeah, one of the memories I have of this, and I'm not sure which one it was, but when my brother and I used to go to the movies on Saturday, they used to have four movies, and one of them would be a creature movie, another one would be a Western, there might be a comedy, and then there might be something else. But I saw one of these, and I don't remember which one it was, but it was definitely not the original Mummy. It was one of these guys, and. You know, so that they stay with you. I mean, is it a classic? No. Is it worthwhile watching? Yes, it is, because again, at 60 minutes long, the story goes by pretty quickly. You have to dispel belief on certain things, like typing and stuff like that. But other than that, it's still done by Universal.
Mm-hmm.
So the The sets are really good. It's not cheaply made.
No. Everything looks good.
Yeah, and that helps.
So earlier this month, guys, you heard us talk about the Monster Pages Blancas, which was made for like 29 cents, right? And literally, they had to go to a town and film in a town because they couldn't make sets, right? This is clearly, they're not in Louisiana. They're on the back lots of Universal, and it looks good. I guarantee you, someone probably can tell us, oh, well, that set's used in this movie. That's in this one. Like, they just redressed them.
Well, that's exactly what happens here, is that the scenes in the monastery, which is, that was shot on the leftover set from the Tower of London.
Right, I'm saying is, right, but again, but they're all sets. They're all pieces and stuff like that. It's not like they didn't really go to a monastery. They're going to go, it's all shot on sets. And that's what kind of set Universal apart as being different, because they had their own backlot, which is why when Hammer started filming things, when you saw how nice everything looked there, you know, how good their stuff looked. And they reused stuff too, but again, the idea of color and putting that thing in, that's why they pushed that envelope. So, but yeah, folks, again, if you haven't checked these out, they're on DVD. Mummy's Curse is no longer on YouTube. It's a shame because they used to have, but they had Christopher Lee actually host back in the day on Sci-Fi Channel, all four of the Mummy sequels, and it has his little bumpers leading in, and somebody put them up on YouTube with all the bumpers. I love watching that because they cut the commercials out, and it's like, oh, now we return to the Mummy's tomb, right, kind of thing, right? And these are usually shown every year on TMC at Halloween time or stuff like that. No, they'll usually do a Sunday night Mummy marathon, and it'll be all four of them because they in basically 4.5 hours, you can show four movies. Unlike normally on TMC, when they're trying to show, or TCM, Turner Classic Movies, they're trying to show like three movies in that time. They can show four. So it becomes one of those things. But they'll also do a night when they show a bunch of Frankenstein movies, a bunch of Dracula movies and stuff like that, which is, well, I love that time of year. So
yeah, I mean, the thing is that obviously what I'm holding in my hand here is the DVD.
The old DVD, yeah.
Of The Mummy's Ghost and The Mummy's Curse all on one. And I'm sure The Mummy's Hand and The Mummy's Tomb,
yes,
that there's another one.
Right, okay. So what happened was the Mummy box set came out back in the day, which I have, the old green box set, remember? And it had the exact same disc you have in your hand, just all together. And it also included, like, Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy. Then the Blu-ray just came out this past year and said it included the digital, but it didn't, of all of them. And that was just the Blu-ray of this. And they cleaned them up even further. And they look great. I mean, they're so crisp when you're watching it in 1080. Again, sometimes when you clean things up, like Monster Pages Blancas, you can see where the glue holding everything together. These look really good because Universal did a good job of filming it. Their sets look good. Their makeups look good. You know, and again, you can say what you want about the story and that stuff, but that's not, you know, we're not talking about that aspect of it. So, all right, folks. So that gets us through now Halloween. So we are getting to those chillier months, and we all know that next month we have Turkey Day coming up, of course, but in the past. Now, so you're saying to yourself, but Jay, what are you going to do, just one episode? No. Jonathan Inbody is going to join me. We're going to do 13 Ghosts. You say, you did 13 Ghosts. No, we're doing 13 Ghosts, the remake. Him and I are going to do the regular episode on the 13th and 13 Ghosts. But Dad and I will be back with you. Now, we've done The Giant Claw. We've done Q, the Winged Serpent. And you're thinking, what other big bird movie can we get there? Well, I was thinking about it, and I thought, it doesn't have to just be big birds, because some people don't eat, don't eat turkey on Thanksgiving. Some people don't. Like, I can't eat turkey all the time kind of thing, right? You know, and some people other things. So I think, what would we eat? It would be about the idea of eating too much. How about Food of the Gods? Food of the Gods. Is there a movie about things going wrong from eating too much, especially the end of that movie? So some of you are thinking like, oh man, Food of the Gods, I remember that. I used to be on TBS all the time. It was, along with Empire of the Ants. So Dad and I will be back for your Thanksgiving episode. Extra big helping of Food of the Gods. So until next, anything else on this one, Dad? I think we're good, right? Yeah. And we'll do Food of the Gods then. And then, of course, again, if any comments or anything like that, folks, please hit us up. Let us know if you have any movie suggestions. Maybe, you know, you love the Mummy's Curses, like maybe the first one you saw. Maybe you saw it in the movie theater. Maybe you saw it as a kid, whatever. Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. So until next time, folks, keep those cards and letters coming. And keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Jacknetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Jacknetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots, Bugs, Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Jacknetti. And you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?